We're joined in the studio by Kepa Dima, who is the deputy chief of party of this Resilience Through Agriculture in South Sudan program. Kepa, you're welcome to Miraya Studios.
Thank you, Lucy, and thanks for having me here.
Yes. First of all, what is the Resilience Through Agriculture in South Sudan program all about?
Thank you. First of all, I would like to give special thanks for having me here and for thanking the U.S. government and its people, the American people, who have, through their efforts and their contribution, made RAS, or Resilience Through Agriculture, a reality in South Sudan. In a nutshell, Resilience Through Agriculture in South Sudan is a four-year funded program starting last year, October. It's going to be running to mid-September 2025. And this is a USAID-funded activity which has been awarded to DAI. DAI is working with these partners. There are three other partners they will be working with. And all these partners will be working collaboratively, engaging with the different stakeholders at various levels, at the national level, at the state level, as well as the community level, to ensure that we are able to empower local communities to enhance their resilience in agriculture production.
Mm-hmm. So okay. Okay, and what is DAI? You mentioned something called DAI.
DAI stands for Development Alternatives Incorporated. It's a USAID-based development partner institution, mm-hmm. Which has been around for the last over 50 years, actually. Mm-hmm. In South Sudan, it has been here since 2013, 2014.
Okay. Now, what are the main gaps that you feel this program will fill? I know, yes, agriculture, but could you just do some specific details?
Yeah, there are a number of areas. Actually, the overall purpose for this initiative is to empower local communities so that they're able to produce food for themselves. And this would basically be looking at how do we empower the agricultural community. And by the way, when I talk about agriculture, this encompasses not only crop production, but it also includes livestock, fisheries, and the different enterprises that are involved in enhancing food security. So this that's the overall purpose for Resilience Through Agriculture in South Sudan. It actually has three main objectives. Objective one is to strengthen local systems and community groups' capacities to strengthen and engage in gender-responsive and diversified as well as market-sensitive agricultural production. Mm-hmm. In other words, we are targeting increased agricultural production, mm-hmm. so that families would be able to produce food for themselves as well as for the local markets. The surplus they should be able to supply to the local markets.
Okay.
Secondly, we are also targeting enhancing nutritional status by empowering communities with the necessary knowledge, the necessary practices and attitudes to how best to prepare food in a very nutritious manner. As you know, food availability is one thing, but actually utilizing that food in a very nutritious manner is another thing. So we want to ensure that communities are empowered to be able to produce and use the food that they have produced for their own nutritional purposes. Mm-hmm. And thirdly, we are also embarking on enhancing livelihoods. When we talk about livelihoods, there are very many livelihoods, including the farm production. But in this regard, we'll be focusing on off-farm production, things like processing, pre-processing, value chains, women and youth engaging in business enterprises, for example, like dry season vegetable production, so that they don't rely entirely on the rain-fed system, but they would also be able to produce throughout the year to meet their nutritional needs. And this would definitely increase their household incomes. Mm-hmm. And when household incomes increase, that means they will be able to provide for their health, for their education. And holistically, it will raise the standard of living in this country.
Okay. And before I continue, I just want to ask you, where does your passion for this kind of work come from? Talking about agriculture and food production, is this part of your profession? Or could you just briefly talk about yourself?
I am by profession a management specialist. Mm-hmm. I actually train in management. And, management is a very diverse field that cuts across different professions. And in this case, I'm using my management skills to manage agriculture projects.
Okay.
So that we can improve the life standards of this country.
All right. And how long have you worked in the agricultural sector or field?
I started working in the then Sudan, actually, as a young man way back in 1995. So I've been in this space for almost the last 25, 30 years.
And then what exactly were you doing?
I have been a program analyst, actually for a couple of years. I was working with the UN Food and Agriculture Organization and then so many other development partners in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this last past year that I actually take up the role of the DCOP for this RAS
market program.
Exactly.
All right. Now, from the three different objectives, you talked about nutrition. What are some of the, from your experience, what are some of the ways food is produced that is not, does not meet the nutrition standards in South Sudan?
In terms of the actual food production, I think they are...
Okay, production to preparation as well, yes, what we consume.
Exactly. In terms of what we produce, I think the food we produce is nutritious.
Mm-hmm.
But I think our main focus here is to diversify,
mm-hmm.
to ensure that people or communities are not just relying on one crop per se, for example, sorghum. But we should be able to diversify that to legumes, to vegetables, fruits, so that, you know, the human body requires different nutrients at different stages as we grow. So it's very important that communities should be able to produce the different food varieties. And that is the nature of God, that God has given us different varieties to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one aspect. The second aspect is also in terms of the actual preparation of the food and the nutritional norms. In most villages in rural South Sudan, you'd find that probably most people can only afford one meal a day. And usually it tends that they eat that meal very heavily. Rather than spreading, you know, small meals,
you know, throughout the day,
time,
yeah,
they sit down and chop
properly.
Yep,
once.
Exactly.
Boom.
So I think that's some of the things that we thought should, you know, we should stay away from that. You know, have a meal in the morning and if possible have lunch in the afternoon.
So during this project, these are the conversations you'll be having with the local people.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. We'll probably get back to that later. Who are the targeted groups? You talked about the local population, but just specify exactly who are you planning to target with this project?
Resilience through Agriculture is going to be working in 13 counties. And these 13 counties are spread up in five states across the Republic of South Sudan. We'll be working in Jonglei State. Jonglei will be covering four counties. That is Akobo, Urol, Duke, and the Pibor administrative area. In Unity State, we'll be working in three counties, that is Panyijar, Leer, and Mayendit.
Mm-hmm.
And in Western Equatoria, we'll be working in two counties, that is Wau and Jur River.
Mm-hmm.
Upper Nile, we're also covering two counties, that is Ulang and Baliet. And in Eastern Equatoria, also covering two counties, that is Kapuito North and Budi.
Mm-hmm.
So in total, we are across 13 counties in five states of the Republic of South Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
I would hasten to say that we, as I explained, we just started last year, the last quarter of 2021. And so at this point in time, we are at the startup phase. So for year one, we would be rolling to five priority counties. That is Akobo, Wau, Jur River, Kapuito North, and Budi. This is to enable us and pick up the momentum in year one, and from year two, which basically starts October this year, then we'll be rolling to the next eight counties. So in total, we'll be covering all the 13 counties.
So you did mention that this is a four-year project. What happens? What activities take place in the first year?
We will actually be focusing on building. The first one is we'll be doing county mapping processes, where we will be identifying the key priorities in these counties. And this would be done in collaboration and partnership with the local stakeholders, the community, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And from our concept of the community, when you talk about community, there are four major corners that we are engaging with here. One, we are engaging with the state level and county level authorities, that is the local authorities. We would also be working very closely with the traditional authorities, that is the chiefs, the headmen, and so forth, who are vested with the traditional authorities to manage affairs at those communities.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll also be working with the civil society, and the youth, the women, and the citizenry in those particular areas.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, but not the least, we'll also be partnering with the private sector and the development partners.
Okay.
So all these stakeholders will actually come together to identify some of the challenges facing the communities in terms of agriculture in those specific localities. Then we would collectively identify those priorities and develop ways on how we can mitigate some of those constraints and work together to alleviate agricultural production.
So you started late last year. When was that exactly?
October.
October. So that brings us down to about 4 months into the project. What have you discovered as you map these areas, these first 5 locations? What is it that you've discovered and you can educate us about and you're going to address with this project?
We have actually noted that there is a cross diversity in all the areas that we have talked about, the 13/5 areas.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that discovery, we are embarking on what we call, flexible and adaptive approach to programming, where in this case we would be developing county-specific strategies. And these strategies will be, for example, if you take Budi, the situation in Budi, economically, socially, is quite different from the situation in Wau, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So we won't equate any of these areas together, but we want to make sure that we are going to focus on developing appropriate mechanisms and interventions in each and every of those 13 counties. So this is going to contextualize to ensure that we are able to address the real needs on the ground felt by the local community.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is that there are also a number of other, USAID and other development partners who are operating in these areas.
Mm-hmm.
So we have forged a joint partnership arrangements in such a way that we will be working with them, in supporting the different interventions that we will be rolling out. You may be already aware that a number of these IPs are specialized in specific areas. For mm-hmm. example, others are doing peace building, and those who are doing trauma counseling, and the others who are specializing in provision of water and, sanitary services.
Mm-hmm.
So we are also working at identifying convergence points, meeting points, where different IPs, implementing partners, would be collaborating with each other. And thirdly, is that we already know that there are also existing coordination, and collaboration, structures on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the structures that we actually want to leverage. We do not want to go into this space and started creating parallel structures that would be competing with the existing structures.
Could you give an example in that case?
For example, the food security cluster, mechanism, coordination mechanism,
mm-hmm.
where in every state there are food security actors.
Mm-hmm.
They have regular coordination meetings to share information, to share experiences, and collectively work around developing ways and mechanisms of how they can overcome some of the challenges. So rather than us going out there and started creating parallel structures around the structures, we would actually be working with the existing structures to ensure that we leverage the existence.
Okay.
And build on the progress already made that far.
All right. If you've just tuned in, this is Miraya Breakfast Show. And in this last hour, we are speaking to Kepa Dima, who is the deputy chief of party of this program, Resilience Through Agriculture in South Sudan. You can also call it RAS. And so we are talking about how this program will be implemented. So far, it's 4 months into the program. They started late last year in October. And yes, we found out that the program will be going, will be addressing agricultural needs in 13 counties across 5 states, and we'll be getting more as we continue with the conversation. But you can start asking questions or even contributing in our text message line. You can send a text message to 0912-177-141. Now, Kepa, when you look at this program and the 4 years, what does this project seek to achieve in these specific locations that you mentioned?
overally, like I said, the overall purpose for this project is actually to build resilience in agriculture among the different stakeholders in areas that we have mentioned. You may be aware that some of the 13 counties in these five states that we talked about are probably some of the most disadvantaged locations in this country. They are the least served, I would say. So we are working with them to ensure that the service delivery level is increased appropriately, but not only that, also ensure that we are able to navigate this space by, you know, working with them to move away from the dependency, you know, on relief assistance and humanitarian assistance. We reckon that there are some unique situations that we cannot change things overnight. And yet,
like with ones? Which ones?
Well, you know, there are some communities, for example, you know what happened in Jonglei, floods had destroyed a lot of the fields.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely with that kind of intervention, they will require some support, you know, to mitigate the catastrophic effects of the floods.
Okay.
So what you are saying is that there are areas that, yes, they may still continue requiring some, you know, humanitarian assistance. But overall, we want to work where possible to enhance the capacities for these communities to be able to produce food, you know, for themselves in a very sustainable manner.
Let me bring you back to the point of dependency. Could you break that down a little bit? How do you plan to address that? Because it's in all kinds of, there are all kinds of ways dependency is experienced in South Sudan. One of them is all families living in one location, which would mean one farm feeding that whole huge family. And yet, if you broke the family into their individual nuclear structures, then that would be so many farms, you know? So how do you plan to address that?
We won't focus on what I would refer to as social engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Social engineering. And I think our intervention is going to focus on building the productive capacities.
Mm-hmm.
Communities' patterns in terms of how they settle differ from area to area.
Yeah.
And I think that is an area beyond the scope of this project. This project is going to focus on building the capacities, like I said, but not only capacities. Agriculture is about production. It's about, for example, if you talk about crop growing, it starts with the seed. Having quality agricultural inputs like the seed, the tools, the extension services, the know-how on agronomic practices, those are very critical and vital for agricultural production. So that is one of the key pillars that this project, the Resilience for Agriculture, will actually be focusing on, ensuring that farmers have access to quality agricultural inputs, for example, the seeds.
Okay.
And the approach to handle these is that we'll be partnering with a number of different stakeholders, both in the public and the private sector, particularly the agro dealers. There are quite a number of agro dealers in this country. We want to work with them and extend the networks of these agro dealers down to the grassroots, where they can supply, you know, tools and seeds at a very affordable, you know, price.
Mm-hmm.
And not only supplying the seed and the tools, but we're also modeling an approach of, you know, a partnership between the private and the public sector in terms of extension services provision. Farmers need to know when to prepare the land. They need to know when to plant. They need to know when to weed, how many times to weed. And not only that, you know, a lot of the agricultural output at some point is lost at the post-harvest period.
Mm-hmm.
So farmers also need to be able to, you know, ensure that their crop, their maple crop, is actually harvested, is processed, pre-processed in such a way that it increases the, you know, the shelf life. For example, groundnuts, if they're not well handled, they get moisture, they get contaminated with,
mm-hmm,
what we call aflatoxin.
That
becomes very poisonous to human beings.
Even to us, yes.
Yes, exactly. So the other key pillar of our program is actually to look at food safety and food security.
Okay.
Because it's one thing producing the food, but is that food safe and secure to consume?
Okay. And how do you plan to engage these local communities? What will your strategy be?
The first point of entry is what we call joint community engagement process. And I'm pleased to announce that as we talk now, actually our teams are rolling out to the counties to start engaging with the different stakeholders at the grassroots level. to ensure that we are able to identify collectively what needs to be done. Because we want this process to be all-inclusive, where the women, the youth, the men, and everybody in the community are part and parcel of these engagements.
Mm-hmm.
Two is that once we have identified these interventions, then we'll be working with the existing groups in terms of building and strengthening their operational status. We know there are quite a number of women groups, for example, youth, and farmer groups who are engaged in agricultural production. So we want to empower these groups and work with them, identify, you know, suitable agricultural enterprises,
mm-hmm.
So that they are able to produce in a way that can actually increase their production. Rather than, for example, basic agricultural practices like, for example, broadcasting versus, you know, line planting, crop intercropping in terms of different crops being grown on the same field at the same time. So farmers need to understand what kind of crops to intercrop, okay, because crops may be competing for the same nutrients at the same time. So if we're able to identify, you know, empower the farmers on which crops to intercrop, you know, whether they should broadcast or they should plant in lines, that will eventually end up increasing the agricultural production, which will mean more food for them.
Okay. Now, as you engage the local community, have you foreseen any challenges? Have you, as you're planning the project and with your short 4 months experience, what challenges have you faced and what have you foreseen already that you feel will affect your project?
So far, so good, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
We're moving very well. We haven't encountered any major challenge. But of course, as you know, life is always full
very
of challenges.
Very unpredictable.
Exactly. Life is always full of challenges. And that is normal. That's the nature of life, actually. So we have to learn
to adapt
with the realities on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So far, I think nothing. But going forward, you know, the terrain of this country is very vast. We could potentially foresee issues to do with logistics, which is a key area to this intervention. And I think that is probably one of the main things that we foresee, you know, hampering some of our, you know, operations. But to mitigate that, we would want to work with the different partners in these different locations so that we can collaborate and engage with each other. I know some of them have very good logistical, you know, base and assets on the ground, and we would want to partner with this and coordinate together. So I think once we're able to work as a team rather than as, you know, individual, you know, agencies, partners here and there, we would be able to address these logistical issues.
Okay. I want to mention language and disability. Is that something you factored in your planning, and how do you hope to address that? Because these are things that are in the community. You have disabled people, those who can't walk, those who can't hear, those who can't speak. Is this something that you factored in?
Yes, indeed. I think in terms of language, I would say that we are very blessed. This program, thanks to the approach that we're having, this program is national-led in nature. Actually, in the whole setup of about 25 to 30 staff,
mm-hmm.
there are only 3 international staff.
Oh, interesting.
The rest of the staff are South Sudanese, just mm-hmm. like myself.
Yes.
And in terms of language, we have endeavored to ensure that we have all the various ethnic groups and, you know, across the country, I would say, different members from different communities who are part of this engagement.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly, we have also worked very hard to ensure that, you know, where possible and practical, we would actually want to get people from those respective communities so that we tap into their knowledge, into their, you know, connectivity with these respective communities to start this program. So we don't see that as a challenge.
Okay.
In terms of inclusivity, yes, I think that is a key area that we are actually very cognizant of. And this program wants to ensure that we are inclusive in all our approaches, including people with physical disparity, disabilities, including women, youth, people of different genders and sexes, and the demographic factors like the ages. We feel that this is a good approach in ensuring that the community comprises of all these categories of people. So it would not be fair for us to exclude any segment of this community. We really want to ensure that where practical and possible, everybody should be part of this process.
Okay. So does your project include equipment other than seeds? Will you also provide equipment sometimes?
There is a plan, yes, to provide some pre-processing equipment and, you know, some basic, you know, agri, you know, processing plants, for example, for cereals, mm-hmm. for groundnuts and for so forth. And even for things like, for example, dry vegetable production in terms of, you know, using solar dryers mm-hmm. and so forth mm-hmm. to preserve food yeah. for the dry season.
Yeah.
So those are some of the enterprises that we'll be working on empowering, you know, as different strengths of, you know, livelihood structures to ensure that communities are able to produce and not just produce, but process, because processing actually enhances the life shelf of a product, agricultural product.
All right. Thank you for answering my questions. Now I'm opening my lines for you to call in. If you have a question, you can call in right now. Kaninda Kswal, Duk Telefon Hasifi Nimrade. This is for women, 0912062950, 0921902950. The men's line is 0912062079 or 0921902079. Now I would really love it if you can call from an area that this project is going to, you know, be implemented in. You did mention Jonglei. You also mentioned Upper Nile, Unity, Eastern Equatoria State, and Northern Bargazal. So go ahead and call me right now if you have a question for Kepa Dima on this project, Resilience Through Agriculture in South Sudan. Do you feel it will be important for you? And if you have any questions, go ahead and send them. So now that you have this four-year plan, what happens after the 4 years? Do you plan to expand to the rest of the five states, or what is the plan?
Our focus, like I said, is on these five states, and this focus is informed by the USAID, you know, strategic framework for South Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
As of now, as we foresee it, this is going to be our priority zone. But of course, we won't rule out that as things keep on changing, dynamics are moving, 4 years down the road, they maybe need to shift the mm-hmm. focus to other areas. But as of now, we are focusing on the five states.
What's your sustainability plan? I mean, there's going down there, teaching people what to do, and then getting them to do it. And then after the project is done, everything dies with the project. So how do you plan to sustain? Yeah, I know it's resilience, but how do you plan to at least monitor and see that it's still growing even after the 4 years?
One of the sustainability approaches that we have empowered, and or rather employed, is what I've just said, that use of national resources
mm-hmm.
in terms of the personnel. That's one aspect. The second aspect is actually building the capacities of the local stakeholders. We'll be working with the different stakeholders, the women, the youth. I hasten to say that actually we'll be providing what we call inclusive partnership facility. In other words, this is a facility where we'll be supporting local stakeholders, CBOs, NGOs, and so forth, to actually be able to work with them, empower them, build their capacities at the same time as we work with the local communities.
Okay.
So we believe that by building their capacities, that would empower them to be able to go beyond the end of this four-year period we talked about.
Okay.
And the other aspect is in terms of the processing we talked about. We are not just going to be dumping, you know, for example, grinding meal to a community and say, here, run it.
Mm-hmm.
We need to train them on, you know, basic technical skills, how to run and maintain that equipment. And we also have to empower them on the business side of the story, because this processing is not just for the sake of processing. It's actually a business enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure that each and every of these entities we'll be working with are actually capacitated to be able to run the show themselves beyond the 4 years.
Okay. All right. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead and call in on 0912-062950 or 0921902950. Good morning.
Good morning. Who's it today?
Yes, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Your name and where you're calling from?
You are connected with James Duor in Good Delhi.
Yes, James Duor, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. The last question that you asked is what I would like also to emphasize on the sustainability of the project itself, and also the issue of corruption in any activity that need to be run in South Sudan. They really prioritize corruption to be the main point of occupy this place. How should you deal with this? Because if you see, somebody can just go and bring all the families, and these families might not willing to do that, but they were just informed to come and get something that they want to get. So with this malpractices, how should you really make sure this issue of corruption is really not interfere with this project that you are going to design? Two, are you going to do what is so-called the practical research, where you can go and see the fields of those people who are going to be supported on this project? Are you going to do that, or you are just going to call anybody for training, and you just train them? If what if I came with 10 or 5 members of my family that have no idea of what to do with that project?
Okay.
Train them, or what do you mean to do with this?
Thank you, James. Thank you very much. Your question has been noted. Radio Mirai, good morning.
Hi, Ron, Lucy.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you, sister?
I'm very fine, thank you. What's your name and where are you calling from? Oh, we lost her. Okay, I hope you can call back. Radio Mirai, hello.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
David McGough from WOW.
Yes, David, go ahead and ask one question.
Yeah. Why do you rule me out?
Because other people also need to ask.
Okay. I want to ask the guests in the studio. You know, in South Sudan, people are interested in well-put program. When there is a project coming that is well-put program, all the people will come.
Mm-hmm.
But when it is a different project of any NGO, many sometimes are not interesting. Do you have other things that you would distribute, like seeds, like equipment for the agriculture, and so forth? So how will you engage people to have interest in that project?
Okay, thank you. How will he make it interesting? Radio Mirai, good morning. Okay, I'll be taking one last caller before Dima can answer the questions. Good morning. Hello. Okay. Shabaka Kida Marquis, and yeah, that's it for now. And if you have any other question, please just send a text message on 0912177141. Yes, back to you, Kepa Dima. You can start with James Duor's question, two questions, one on corruption and the other on practical research.
Thank you, James, for these brilliant questions. Like we already mentioned about the sustainability issue, the sustainability aspect is a very key area for us, a very key consideration. And this is in cognizance of the fact that so many projects have been implemented in this country. Some of them, they die immediately, the funding stops.
Yep.
So we really want to make sure that we learn lessons from the past experiences, and we want to ensure that this project is going to be a success by ensuring that sustainability measures are put in place. One of the key measures we, like mentioned before, is one, building the national staff capacities, and also working with the local institutions in terms of building the capacities to be able to work with the local population.
Okay.
And that is very critical. Two, in terms of issues to do with corruption. People say corruption. Yes, corruption is nearly everywhere.
In the society.
You know, it's everywhere. And I think the starting point should be ourselves. We must commit ourselves to living a very transparent and responsible lifestyle. We should be living, preaching the gospel and living with the gospel. So if, particularly when it comes to beneficiary selection, this is an area where a lot of people tend to manipulate.
Mm-hmm.
That's why James is saying someone would bring his family members, his relatives, his clan, and within no time you find a group of 50, 60 people already formed.
Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about when you talked about having plants in place, facilities, and when you talk about sustainability, that means you're going to leave it behind. Who handles it, and how do you make sure that you have mechanisms in place so that it's not, you know, controlled by one person? Yeah.
Yeah, that's another key area also, to ensure that, you know, we don't empower certain individuals or certain groups to become oppressive against the others.
Mm-hmm.
We have laid down plans actually in terms of in transition, eventual transition from this project to when we will be facing out. So we'll ensure that every single activity, the ownership structure in the first place must be very clear. For example, if it is a farmers group, who are these farmers? Where do they come from? Who do they belong? And how can they work together to ensure that they protect their interests as a group, not one person overriding the whole thing? And to do that, we'll ensure that each and every of these groups, for example, develop, you know, constitutions, guiding bylaws to navigate through their operations to ensure that they are able to monitor and manage collectively a shared responsibility. So that they are able actually to go beyond, you know, when we'll be facing out.
Okay.
So those are two brief answers to James Duar from Gudele on this point. On the point raised on research, yes, our approach, there are a number of instances where we'll be establishing what we call farmer field schools and farming as a business where, you know, groups will be working together. So the model of this farming as a business or farmer field schools is actually we'll be doing experimental research with the farmers themselves. We'll be showing, you know, we'll be working with the farmers to see, for example, intercropping different strains of crops, whether it is broadcasting or, you know, row planting. We'll be able to set up parallel fields within the demo, you know, fields to ensure that farmers are able to see with their own eyes from their own practices what is good for them.
Okay.
So that is a practical way of research with the local farmers so that they can actually learn from there.
James, you're still answering James's question.
Yes,
okay.
Secondly, also, we'll be, you know, working with role, you know, model, farmers who are role models, you know, exemplary farmers in particular communities, so that other farmers can come and visit those sites and see what is it that these farmers are doing differently from them, that they could learn and copy and also implement on the farms.
Okay.
So in that way, they will be seeing practically, they say seeing is believing. When you have seen what someone has done, definitely you'll be able to copy and emulate on your farm.
All right. James, I hope your question is well answered. David Magok is asking, he's asking you, I did not understand him clearly, but he did talk about whether you have mechanisms in place in whether it was inclusivity or something. Yeah, do you remember what he?
Yes, I did. Actually, yeah. I took note of that. He was asking that, you know, a lot of people when you talk about WFP, everyone will come very quickly.
Yeah, how will you make it interesting? That
exactly,
was the question.
Exactly.
Yes.
So we reckon with the fact that people at sometimes look at the short term benefits. And that is the reason why certain projects people come to it very quickly because they see the fruits are low hanging, so to speak. The approach we are taking is this is a long term project. This is empowering people to be able to produce for themselves. So our starting point is actually to trigger the interest in the local community to see beyond what they can just receive in their hand and consume and gone. They need to be able to, you know, to be sensitized. We're working with them to sensitize them, to see that they're able to see the future beyond handouts, so that, you know, we can work with them to empower them to be able to produce. In terms of specific things, you mentioned about whether we're giving out things like seeds and equipment. Yes, I already
mentioned. Yeah.
And it's very important that we our approach is not just handing equipment or handing seed to people. We really need to empower them to be able to use that seed, to use that equipment in a way that is very sustainable.
So how will you make it attractive? How attractive is it now? Because like you said, when they hear World Food Program, they know it's free food, but then you're coming to teach. You're coming to, you know, it will be a long time before they actually reap benefits. So how will you make it attractive?
I think the key thing here is having inclusive dialogue with committee members. A lot of the behaviors that we see around confine on the mindset. So we really want to trigger a change in the mindset so that people are able to see that them getting involved in actual production is going to be of long-term benefits to them as a community and as individuals. So sensitization is the key word here, you know, engaging with them, painting a very holistic picture, you know, a bigger picture rather than just the immediate needs that they are looking at fulfilling.
Okay. Our last question, as we are concluding, is coming in from Bo Gabriel from Makobo. Makobo is one of your areas where you'll be implementing this project. And his question is about the issue of insecurity. So he's saying, with the insurance security, isn't this going to affect you? And how are you going to perform the project? Will you actually be in the field, or do you just plan to go and train people?
We are actually, thanks for that question from Akobo. We are actually rolling out, and as I talk now, we already have presence in Akobo. I'm happy to say that happens to be the first of all the 13 counties that we talk about, that we already have a presence on the ground in Akobo. We already have personnel there. In terms of the unfolding realities as they go on, you know, South Sudan is, we live in a very dynamic space, and this dynamic space requires us to do what we call scenario planning. We, in as long as, you know, things are safe now, we don't know what the future holds. We believe things will get better. That is our belief. But there are things that we need to reckon that are beyond our control and our sphere. But nonetheless, we will ensure that we will roll forward with our implementation where practically possible. We can only hold back and develop new approaches depending on the, you know, unfolding realities on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But as of now, we're able to roll to these counties that I've already mentioned.
Okay. Now, before, as you close, if you could just talk about, you know, once this is successful, there will be a lot of food, and we want to at least not result, we don't want this to result into food wastage. So what is your plan as far as providing a market for this food that you hope to encourage the citizens to produce?
I would say the market for food in South Sudan is vast. It's very big. If you are very observant, a lot of the things that we consume are coming from outside this country. So if we can increase the local production, local farmers are able to produce, you know, massive quantities, first for themselves and for the market. The market is, as at this point, readily available.
It is already available.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming and telling us about this project. I wish you all the best with it.
Thank you very much, and I'm happy to be here. My last parting shot is that I want everyone to ensure that this is a project that will be very successful in all the 13 counties that we have mentioned. Let's work together. We'll be meeting each other. Let's make this country great. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That is Kepa Dima of the Resilience Through Agriculture in South Sudan project.